a message from high above. Oh, oh, oh,
pull the theater. The theater.
Hang out, Louie!
Theater, theater.
Yo, yo, yo.
Did you guys ever have that weird dude come to your elementary school and like do yo-yos at you for like 30 minutes at an assembly?
Yeah. Like, yeah, I definitely have. Yes. Something like that. I don't know, remember it being yo-yos specifically, but I do remember wacky.
Juggler, maybe? Back
Jugglers.
In your day.
Yeah.
Yo-yos weren't cool until the 90s.
I guess.
My school was fond of Lincoln impressionists.
Oh my.
Sat in a lot of Lincoln assemblies.
Wow. Well, is Sarah Kane was
it's
born
Sarah
on
Kane's
this
birthday,
day,
who we've covered before. And yes. It's also Jonathan Larson's birthday. Yeah. Who we've covered.
Yeah, two sad ones that we lost way too early. Too early. I was telling you beforehand, but I had literally just had a conversation about Sarah Kane with somebody who was like, yeah, didn't you feel like she was gonna be the next big thing that was going to break it all open? I'm like, yes, I've said exactly that. Like, what would have been is so sad, but the works she left us were visceral masterpieces.
That's why they killed her.
That's why they killed
her. Conspiracy theory podcast. No,
here we go. Here
playwright we go. Conspiracy theories.
Yeah, no, but we love our playwrights on this podcast because this is theater.
Yeah.
The theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Bertram.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett. Way to jump in there with that, Bailey. With that intro.
Thanks.
Sorry to interrupt.
That's the best segue I could do.
That was good.
Each week, we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. Now, this week is a continuation of a mini-series that I have been doing for two whole seasons. NBC Live Musicals miniseries.
Yes. Yeah.
They started bad. They're getting better. Let's be clear.
I will concede. I will absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, yes. We started with Sound of Music Live, and then we did Peter Pan Live. Mm-hmm. And then last time we did what?
The Wiz?
Oh, The Wiz Live, great.
Yeah.
The Wiz Live was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now, next up is Hairspray Live. Now, I will say, I've been teasing that we're going to also cover Grease Live, which technically happened before this, the same year, but it's not NBC.
Right.
It's
Was
Fox.
It Fox?
Yeah.
Oh.
So that's not technically part of this miniseries, but I'm going to make it part of this miniseries.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wanted to keep going with this. This is the first one of season four, Hairspray Live. It came out in 2016.
Yeah.
And we got together the other day and watched it on...
With Lucifer's Pizza.
With Lucifer's Pizza. Not a sponsor.
Not spawn.
We're not sponsored. Yeah, that's right. But we sponsor them because that's some expensive-ass pizza.
Goddamn we do. Yeah. It pricey pizza.
That's pricey.
But great.
Pizza.
It was great.
It was good. It's
exotic.
Yeah. But yeah, we had a blast watching it. It was a sleepy night, but we got through it and we had a good time, I felt.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're gonna get into it because this is a musical that I know a lot of people really love. The Wiz was the first time where it kind of was like, oh, we could do these. These live musicals can still work and there'd be something to it. And this sort of proves that in a way. I enjoyed the show a lot. It's Hairspray, based on the 1988 John Waters film, which then became a musical in 2002, which at the Tonys won Best Musical, Best Book, and Best Score.
It won a crap load. Yeah, it won like eight, didn't it?
I think it just won those three. Musical, book, and score. It might have had some acting stuff, but I'm not completely sure. Then the movie came out in 2007, and that's the big one that most people know, I guess, probably, non-theater people would know better. Then this was in 2016. So it's Hairspray Live, directed by Kenny Leon, who won the Tony for Best Director of Raisin in the Sun years ago. He also directed Wiz Live, which was great. So this was him sort of improving on what he had done. He also did the Fences revival. He did the Radio Golf Broadway. Oh. He did Gem of the Ocean revival. He's like that guy.
Cool.
Yeah. He's done tons of shit. He rules. And then the teleplay was written by Harvey Fierstein based on the original musical script by Mark O'Donnell based on the original movie by John Waters. So it's a lot.
it's a lot.
The cast is really interesting. There's some pretty heavy hitters in here.
Mm-hmm.
My big note that I'll just say now to get us started is I could feel the nerves of this one. I could feel the anxiety of the performers in this one, whereas in the other ones, I kind of didn't. Like, even in Sound of Music, if they were so confident that I was just sort of like, sure, even when, like, they were tripping over camera cords and shit, right?
Yeah.
The Wiz had a lot of confidence. I don't know about y'all, but I felt the anxiety in Harvey. I felt the anxiety in Ariana Grande. I felt the anxiety in some other places. Jennifer Hudson, I think, is the one who really... And the woman who played Tracy. I think those two were full confidence level. Everyone else, you could feel Martin Short being a little nervous. He was going to mess up. Like... That's sort of my hot take, besides the fact that I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Mm-hmm. I think I agree. I think for me, it started out slow, and I couldn't figure out if that was the show itself, just the structure of the show. But it was a bit of a slow start. It took me about 20 to 30 minutes before I was like, okay, I'm in this. I'm enjoying this.
Do you think, while I know it was a part of the production and an on-purpose thing, having that extra live, quote-unquote, studio audience in there, do you think that could have thrown a wrench in it that was making people feel a little bit more apprehensive and nervous?
Sure.
For people that just show up and go on camera and don't have people in front of them, like a whole audience in front of them watching.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, nerves are going to be high. You're about to, you know, perform in front of tens of millions of people, and you've got to pull it off. You know?
Well, really, what I think the audience did, which is both a good and bad thing, I think it raised the energy level, which is good.
Agreed.
But you could feel them going a little too far. The adrenaline hit. And you could feel them, like, especially like Martin Short, like he's the one I'm really thinking who was just like a little bit like ahead of everything, and we're all like, dude, calm down, like you're
and he settled into it pretty
and he
good.
Did and yeah. you know, and everyone else did too, but even Harvey you could feel just being like, and this has to be really fast, and we're like, okay, calm down. It really doesn't, like, we're with you.
That's a good Harvey.
I'll do it again later.
Who wants to know what this is about?
Sure.
Sure. Yeah.
CJ's Breakdown. Picture it. Early 1960s. Baltimore. High schooler Tracy Turnblad dearly wants to get on The Corny Collins Show, a local TV program that features a cast of young dancers. She makes it on, is constantly made fun of for being different, and then makes further waves when she decides that integration is The Corny Collins Show's next step.
That's true.
Yeah, it's a tight thing. I think that going back to the whole evolution of it and the original John Waters movie, I think that my biggest note, well, no, my second biggest note, because I knew what was coming. It doesn't have quite the bite of the John Waters original. It's a little bit more poppy and understandably, you know, they're putting it on Broadway.
Yeah.
So
I mean, that's the musical in general. The musical neuters that John Waters feel a bit. Not as much as the 2007 movie does. The 2007 movie with John Travolta fully, in my opinion, deletes the John Waters of it all. Like,
it
there's
does.
A lot
it
of
lacks,
references, but like...
It doesn't have the style. We were talking about the person that directed Matilda.
Yeah.
Would have been a great pick to direct that musical. And because there was just so much literal color in it, like the production design was so cool. And you're right, for that movie, I wasn't quite sure what they were going for.
It's really clean.
Yeah.
And John Waters is really dirty.
Yeah.
So I'm just completely. And the stage show does have a bit of that raunch, right? Just a little bit. It's not as much as the movie, you know, but it's there. And then the live, Hairspray Live, that we're talking about now kind of goes in between the two of like being, excuse me, between the musical and the movie. It's right in the middle where it's like, it's not as raunchy as maybe the musical. They cut a few things, they changed a few things, but it's not as tame as the 2007 movie.
Right.
So I can appreciate that. They left some things in there. They actually dropped a ton of references, which we'll talk about later, to John Waters and other things surrounding the original film. But yeah, I really love that original Ricky Lake movie. Yeah. I saw it as a kid on TV and was like, what is this?
It's so different. I mean, that's the thing.
Mine was Crybaby.
We could do a little John Waters moment right here. You guys, John Waters fans?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about him, like when I was coming up, like you had to go to sort of the back cult section of the video store to get right. John Waters. I mean,
it was in the alternate lifestyles section of Black.
Right, you know? And he was always so unique. And one of the things that was so unique about Hairspray, and I remember, I was young, but I remember when it came out that it was his first PG movie. Almost all of the movies before that were X. Like, they were literally given X ratings because of, you know, the insanity of it all. And this was him kind of going, oh, and all of his movies are saying something. He's always talking about, you know, the underrepresented, and he's a gay man in Hollywood and in Baltimore growing up. I'm sure that was not easy. So he's bringing all this sort of underground stuff into all of his films. But then when you get to Hairspray, he's changing directions artistically a little bit, and it sort of comes alive, like it a musical aesthetic to it.
Yeah.
And kind of, it's dirty in the under the fingernails, like you said, Bailey, but there's also just sort of this energy and color to it that it isn't easy to replicate, I would imagine.
Well, his stuff is easily, in my opinion, it's kind of what you're saying, is easily made into a musical, a stage show.
Yeah.
Like, it already kind of lives as a sister. Like, it's, you know,
yeah,
because
he lives
theater.
In camp and all of that.
Camp,
so
yes.
There is a Crybaby musical that rules.
I gotta see it. I would like I'm gonna watch the movie tonight. I haven't seen
one
it in a while.
Great movie, two great musical. Actually, I might prefer the musical only because there are two songs, but specifically one that everyone should go listen to. It's called Screw Loose.
Okay.
You gotta belt it. And it's this really high, like, screw loose, like kind of like scream song that when a woman can really, or when a person can really hit it, when it can really do it, it will bring the house down. It's
all
absolutely
right.
Incredible. Let's talk through the cast a little bit, because this is pretty interesting. Let's start with Tracy. There's this pretty cool thing that always happens, which is starting from the original Hairspray movie, which is that they always find a no-name to take the part of Tracy. So Ricky Lake wasn't anybody, and she got cast. Mm. And then you have your original person on Broadway whose name I'm all of a sudden forgetting. It is Marissa Jarrett Whitaker. Both of whom appear in this movie, and we'll talk about that later. Nikki Blonsky does it in the 2007 film. And then here. So you have Maddie, and I think her last name is Bayo?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's Bailio.
Bayo.
I don't know, but she brought the house down.
Yeah, she was fucking great. I was with her from the beginning. Yeah, she was great. Because I was in after that first music video, or first music video, first song. I know nothing about Hairspray, had never seen any version of it, so
They did the stage thing, and they played sort of the trick on us that you can't do on stage, which is, on stage, she's standing there, and there's a bed behind her, and she's singing to us, and it's standing up, right? Mm-hmm. The bed is standing up as if she's laying on it.
Right.
What they did was they zoomed into her face so that when the bed pulled away, we were like, oh, she's standing. That's hilarious.
Great bit.
So that's kind of fun to, like, use both theater and film in that same moment and create that moment. We all laughed at that moment. Like, that was moment one. We were all kind of like, ha-ha, let's go.
Yeah.
So that opening number was solid, and she has this energy that to me is the perfect Tracy energy, which is both a little overconfident, but in a good way, but also kind of insecure. It's like she's writing that line.
No, it's a cool balance.
But she's also like a little sexy, a little sexual.
Horny
as
fuck.
Horny.
I love
she's
horny.
She's 16 and horny,
stories.
And she's just kind of like, she's like, I just want, I don't know, I want dudes. I want Link. and you're like, hell yeah.
And then with this, you know, cool moral ballast that, you know, that that drives everything that she does, that drives all of her actions, you know?
Yeah.
She doesn't, it's a naivete coupled with a real sense of right and wrong.
Yeah. You
know? And that's what's so cool about the character and the whole story too, is just
right.
this,
and
we're
Maddie
present
was
the story.
Such a good singer and such a good dancer.
Yes.
Which is very important for that role. And she is just great. I pass.
Oh,
I get, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. For I guess sure. She was a sophomore in college. This was her first yeah. professional gig.
Oh, that's cool as fuck. I love that.
But that's the thing. It's supposed to be sort of an on-screen or on-stage debut for the person doing it. That's kind of the tradition anyway that they've upheld.
Ricky Lake was nobody before that.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty cool. Then, who do we want to go to next? Let's move over to her best friend, the megastar Ariana Grande playing Penny Pingleton. Ariana actually asked for this role. She said she heard that they were doing it and called up NBC and was like, yo, this is a dream role. I really want to play it. So they threw her in. Because she is who she is, they offered to write her 4 solo songs to be written just for this performance that Penny would perform. Which they did earlier this year for Grease Live. Fox did it. Carly Rae Jepsen came in and sang like random interstitial songs, which was fun, I guess. But then Ariana was like, I'm not doing that. I just want it to stay true to the role, and I don't want it to be like an Ariana night. And they're like,
Right on, Ariana.
Yeah, right on. Good honor.
Something else about her that's interesting is she's about to be Glinda in the Wicked film.
Fun.
Which, Easter egg, obviously, Kristen Chenoweth, who plays Van Tussle, whatever her, you know, Mrs. Van Tussle, I don't know. What's her first name?
Something. Velma.
Velma. Velma Van Tussle originated the role of Glinda in Wicked, obviously. So it's kind of fun to see them in a show together. There's a few other Easter eggs like that are kind of interesting. But I hope she, how do I say this in a nice way? I hope that for Wicked, she has spent some years working with maybe a coach or something that has brought her into the musical theater sound.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because in this film, she is doing very pop Ariana vocals, and it doesn't really fit with what's written, in my opinion.
I agree.
Well, and I felt too, which I guess this works for a character. I thought she disappeared behind anyone else that was in the scene with her, like just acting wise. But I guess, you know, Penny's kind of supposed to be like mousy and shy.
Yeah, she is.
But she kind of just played it vacant.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be boring. And that's what it was. It ended up her being just kind of looking around the stage like, I don't know.
With a really silly wig on.
But like Amanda Bynes is one of the more memorable parts of the 2007 movie.
I will agree with that.
Make that role more than what she did, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But no. Hey.
Yeah.
She did fine. I think she gets like a half pass for me. She gets like a slight pass.
Yeah, I didn't know that until you just said that she had sought out the role because I thought it was a bit of stunt casting, you know.
Well, they all are. I mean, it's walk and it's hook kind
you're
of
right,
shit.
Yeah, you know? All that. But she worked, and that last number that she, although I thought that was a mistake because with the duet with
Jennifer Hudson,
because
that was weird.
It was weird, and no matter who you are or what, you know, Jennifer Hudson's voice is just Herculean in terms of its power. And Ariana Grande has a beautiful voice, but she wasn't going to keep up with that.
Yeah, it just reminded me of the 90s Disney musical movies where at the end when the credits are playing, like Celine Dion and someone else is singing the theme song from the movie. That's what that part made me.
Yeah, it was a little Quest for Camelot. You're right. I think those are two very different singers, obviously, so it's kind of hard to compare them in general, but like it was weird that just these two stepped out to have this like moment, and it's kind of like, we just watched You Can't Stop the Beat, which is like a 90-minute song. The joke in musical theater, I did this show in high school, I played Edna, and the joke always is like, you can't stop the breath, because it's, you have to be going during You Can't Stop the Beat because, and you have to remember 20 different potential lyrics that are coming up because it's every time, ever since we first saw the light, and then the next time it's, every friend since we first fucking began, and then little man is naked. And then that kind of shit, like, it's tough. It's a really tough ending of the show. So then to have them step out and sing this big like power song, I was kind of like, I don't need this. Let's talk about J-Hud, though, since you brought her up.
Yeah.
Jennifer Hudson, solid pass.
I don't think get to call her J-Hud.
Me?
That's awful familiar.
Yeah, I don't think you've had earned that. I'm messing with you, brother.
I saw Aretha, and you two did not.
I did see Aretha. I saw it.
Oh, well, I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought she was great in it.
She's amazing.
Yeah, J-Hud... Sorry, Jennifer Hudson, who has like this amazing story. Like people kind of forget this, but she didn't win American Idol.
No.
Like people don't think about that. Like I think her year
wasn't it like the second or third year or something?
It's like the third or fourth year. Yeah, it was like Fantasia won or somebody. It was somebody super random. No, I think it was Carrie Underwood.
It might have been.
I think it might have been Carrie Underwood.
You don't say.
Yeah. Fräulein Maria herself.
Thank you. Thank you both.
The only Fräulein Maria.
The only Fräulein. I love that.
But Jennifer, I think, is absolutely incredible in this. It's so sad that Motormouth isn't introduced until like...
The second act? 45
minutes in. It's the second act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you feel like you've missed out on a lot when she comes in because you're like, oh, we could have been hearing her.
We could have been in this joint the whole time.
Not to say, now I do love the score. I love this score. I think every song slaps. There's a couple that I think you could cut for this particular version that don't really be needed for this televised version that are maybe more fun on stage.
Mm.
But that's just me. Just some of the like... The kids on the TV show songs, they had like one too many.
Oh, yeah, I get that.
I liked the music more than I thought I would. I don't think, for me, it captured the vibe of that time period as fully as I wanted. It's good standard Broadway songs, but I didn't love it, but I liked it a lot. It charmed
me. You are missing a couple of songs there. One in particular that they... cut from the original musical, but then put into the movie, but then also didn't play in this, which is weird. It's called New Girl in Town, and I love that song. And it's the trio that sings behind her in Welcome to the 60s, that like come out of the poster, you know what I'm talking about? That trio gets a whole other song called New Girl in Town. And the idea is that on quote-unquote Negro Day, this is what they would be performing.
Right.
And it's like really cute and fun. But that song is more in like the 60s vein, and there's a couple that are more in that vein. But for the most part, you're correct. It's speaking to the 2002 sensibility of Broadway more than it is the time.
And I didn't hate that. I ended up getting charmed by it. I just it was going back to that whole earlier thesis. You know, I wanted a little bit more dirt, a little bit more John Waters stuff. But
yeah. But when Jennifer gets that one big number, the protest number, she steals
the fucking show without question. I want to see her just get more straight acting roles. Obviously I want to hear her singing, but she knows, I think she's one of those people that intrinsically knows how to perform.
Sure.
Knows how to interpret a song and tell a story and convey that emotion.
Did you see her absolutely phenomenal performance as Grisabella in Cats?
I gotta watch that.
Yes. I took two gummies when I sat down to watch Cats because by that point I knew what I was getting into, and
I saw it twice.
I didn't hate it because I was high as a fucking kite.
Well, I saw it once in theaters because I knew I had to. I was like, I have to see this in theaters, so I went and saw it. And then a few weeks later, I was told that there had been a new release.
Oh, that's right. They
had cut out the buttholes and all the other
stuff.
And
I was like, the butthole.
I guess I gotta go see the new version. And so I went and saw the new version. But when I went the second time, it was full of people who were there, I guess ironically, but kind of not.
Cat heads.
But they were treating it like Rocky Horror. Like they were throwing shit at the screen. It was great. I had a blast. So next up, let's talk Harvey Firestein.
Yeah. Yeah.
A great playwright and performer.
Oh my
Harvey.
God. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with your analysis, Bailey. Like, he was definitely nervous at the top during that
You could
first
feel it.
scene. And but then as he settles in and he gets those moments, especially with her, and the moments with the more quiet, intimate moments with her and Martin Short, he's fucking good,
Well, he
man.
settles down, like you said, and he gets real good. But this is my take on him. I don't think he's nervous as a performer at the beginning. I think he's nervous because he wrote this teleplay.
Oh, yeah, he
Because
wants it to
every
go well.
joke, you can feel him being like, "It's a joke." You get that it's a joke? And we're like,
Yeah.
"Yeah, dude, we're with you." And then
Yeah.
later he's like, "Oh, people are laughing, people are with us. I'm going to calm down." And he does. But you can kind of feel him being the writer.
To be
Yeah.
in the position where you are both handing your baby over, but then you
And
also have to perform the whole time, you can't
right.
just sit in the audience and chew your nails. You have to also deliver
Right. It's
performance
like
wise.
jumping out of a plane with a parachute that you made.
Right.
It's like, oh, dear Lord, I hope I got this right.
Yeah. Now, obviously, in
Absolutely.
the original film, this is Divine, the
Yeah.
late great Divine, one of my favorite performers of all time.
A fascinating person and a
Fascinating.
fascinating story
Watch
and
I Am Divine if you haven't. It's a great way to get to know Divine. And then just, I mean, constantly referenced on RuPaul's Drag Race and beyond. Divine is a huge part of our culture, whether you like it or not, whether you know it or not. But Harvey originated this role on Broadway.
Yeah.
So that's kind of fucking cool.
Yeah. It was such a great choice and not an obvious one, but he just nailed it. Like, he's so good. Like, he understands moments and connections. You can see that he is a trained dude who's who knows what he's doing, and so creates really wonderful moments of connection with him and her, especially, I thought was just marvelous. And the concern about her, and then that whole subplot about, body image and size and beauty, and oh, it was, and he just is in that moment and understands it so clearly.
You know who I kind of love to see in that role? And it's because of one of our in-stuffs that we did seasons ago is fucking Nathan Lane. I'm like, I wonder.
Oh, Nathan Lane would kill
Interesting.
it.
I don't
I would
know
think he'd
what he
kill
would
it.
do, though. He would probably go a little bit more towards the John Travolta route, where he would play it
Yeah,
probably more as a woman than as, like, well, I'm not saying they don't play it as a woman, but
Sure.
Harvey and Divine both go for the sort of,
Yeah.
Divine is real raunchy with it and just kind of
Yeah.
doing this.
Yeah.
And Harvey is obviously doing Harvey. But the whole thing to me is like, it doesn't really matter what you do with that character, but I like the raunch of it having sort of a deeper masculine voice. I like the idea of there
Sure.
being kind of like a rawness to it. And John Travolta fully deletes that, right, in 2007. Just wants it to be real Baltimore and nothing else. And I'm like, that's all cool, but that goes along with that movie, which is that it's just neutering all the things about the
It just
original that are
just
great.
missed it. Like
Yeah.
you gotta I
I will
think
say I
there
like
were
that movie. I do like that movie, to
I
be
don't hate
clear.
it. There's
Just for different reasons.
definitely there's moments to be sure. But one thing that I admired about having, and I haven't seen the show live, but I listened to the cast recording and in watching this, is that they let themselves sort of have that aesthetic and have that vibe, they were trying to draw from it. And I felt like that the movie was trying to resist it and get
Yeah.
away from it. And I'm like,
To
why?
bring.
Like, it's so
Yeah.
much, you got so much style and flair to play with and use.
Nathan Lane, write in. Tell us what you would do with the role
Hi,
of
Nathan
Edna.
Lane.
Yeah, I just don't know. I just feel it. I mean, maybe he would try to do it gruffer. I don't. He doesn't fit it for me. I think it'd be a really interesting
It'd be a
experiment.
different take. Yeah. I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
yeah.
Because also, like, the guy who played Mr. Sprinkles in this, who Scott, you said you kind of knew about, he has a
Oh.
twin, Paul Voigt,
Oh,
or whatever his
yeah.
name is.
Yeah.
He took over on Broadway as Edna for a little while. And I think
Ah.
it's that type, it's the giantness, it's the You know, I mean, I guess there's something silly about Nathan Lane coming out being really tiny and, you know, but I like the whatever his name, the Hardy her husband was, I don't know, whatever his name is.
husband Wilbur.
Wilbur. I like that he's so tiny and energetic and she's not.
Yeah.
You know, that's anyway, but Nathan Lane, maybe, I don't know. I don't love Nathan Lane. I think he's fine. I think he's fine.
I like Nathan Lane.
I have a whole thing. He's great. He's just an asshole. But I think he's a great performer. Martin Short. Martin Short does a good job. He's a little nervous. You can feel him sort of begging for laughter to no avail because I don't think the studio audience is allowed to laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? I was wondering about that. Yeah.
Or if they were, we couldn't hear them.
Yeah, he has a really cool volume control, a gain control, if you will, that you can see when he's done his live stuff over the years, his SNL, Second City stuff, where he can turn it up and really get it. And then, like, you watch Only Murders in This Building, where he's still playing a big, broad character, but he quiets it down. And I got the sense that he wasn't quite sure what direction to go. Am I doing this theater live thing? Am I doing this for a camera?
Yeah.
Which am I doing this for?
Sure.
And he was the same. Once he settled into it,
he was very good.
He was great. You know, especially that duet that they have and
that was
on
fun.
The street. And
he's
a good dancer too. He moved quite well.
And such a classic thing for him to bark at her. Like, it's literally the most Martin Short thing ever. I feel like he's done it in 1,000 movies, 1,000 sketches where he does
Yes.
So Martin Short. But yeah, he does a solid job. I thought he was interesting. Did you see The Morning Show? Did you watch The Morning Show?
No.
He's on that, right? And he does. Mm-hmm. I just bringing this up because Scott was talking about the difference that he can be really muted when he needs to be. On The Morning Show, he's also kind of like a big character, but then he has these scenes and this like one particular monologue where you're like, holy fuck, is he one of our great actors? Like, he's so fucking good on that show. Watch The Morning Show if you have the chance. The first season, second season is not.
Okay.
The originator of this role was Jerry Stiller in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So Jerry Stiller then in the 2007 movie plays Mr. Sprinkles. No, he doesn't play Mr. Sprinkles. He plays the guy who Sean Hayes played in this. He plays Mr.
Wait,
I know I who you're talking. I know
Mr. Pinky.
Mr. Pinky. That's it. Mr. Sprinkles is the owner of the TV station. Mr. Pinky is the owner of the plus size clothing line. Yeah. So in the 2007 movie, it's Christopher Walken playing Wilbur. And then this is also very confusing. Jerry Stiller plays Mr. Pinky in the 2007 movie, but he originated Wilbur. Blah 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 blah. Martin Short does okay. I'm going to give him a pass.
Okay.
Yeah, gentleman's pass.
Gentleman's pass, if you will. Yeah, I'll agree. I'll go with that. Like, yeah, I've seen him do much better, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that pairing of him and Harvey.
What about Dove Cameron as Amber Von Tussle?
Oh, I thought she was great. I mean, I thought she was spot on. I love her being the daughter of Kristen Chenoweth, who it's like, I feel like with Kristen Chenoweth, they're like, hey, you need to play like a super hot cougar, but a bitch. Like, I thought Dove Cameron was the perfect daughter version of her. I thought they were both great together.
Really well described. Yeah, I thought she nailed everything that character needed to be. And she was very good. Like, her voice is great.
She was clearly a musical theater person.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me.
And they both actually, another Easter egg here is that Kristen played Dove's mother on the Disney Channel. I think it's a movie called The Descendants.
Oh.
Which is like about Disney characters' children, like villains and their children or whatever. So Kristen played Maleficent. And Dove played her teenage daughter, Mal.
Right. I heard about this. I never saw it. That's so cool.
So they had already worked together, which is kind of fun. So you can feel them having a little bit of a vibe already. They did a great job.
Yes.
And like you said, Siege, perfect casting for both of them. Did we already talk about Kristen?
No.
We've just brought her up, but we haven't graded her yet.
She slays.
I was so surprised by it. Yeah.
And they let her do some of her high notes and even places where they're not actually in the show. And they're just like, Kristen, can you just go there and hit a high note? She's like, yeah. I got it.
Yes, I got it.
She's
yeah,
so hot.
No, she's marvelous, and she's just, I hate to use a
still
cliche
a
like
babe.
This. She's such mm-hmm. a babe.
Yeah.
And she's so captivating. Like, you just, your eyes just go to her, and you want to, you just can't not stop looking at her. She's just yeah. beautiful and effervescent and talented, and we should all
bow down.
Bow down, yes. I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Want to know where she gets her spray tans?
We're not worthy. Probably somewhere in L.A. You're at home. Okay, let's go a little quicker. So, oh, actually, well, okay. We have to talk about Andrea Martin for a second.
Oh, my God.
I was telling
Krasner, roommate, friend of the pod, about this bit, and I made him laugh talking about it because he could envision exactly what she did. But she's fucking great. She only
what
has... Where she rolls over the bed... she's like, because you can tell, and it's such an actor thing, especially on stage, when you're on a set or a piece of a set where you're asked to do a piece of action that you physically shouldn't be able to do with any difficulty, and she could easily have reached across and grabbed her daughter.
Right, it's like her daughter's like running out the window, and she's like trying to get her. So she is supposed to, yeah, like you say, like grab across the bed for her. Instead, she like throws herself on the bed, spread eagle, and just like flips around
over it. And the whole time,
it's
like
that across the car hood is what it reminds me.
Yeah, it's like
me.
Across
yes,
the
yeah,
car
and
hood.
She's
hilarious.
It's the scream.
But she's in like a pencil skirt, and she like yes. hits, she's like, oh god. Andrea Martin is one of my favorite. I said this the other night. She's one of my favorite character actresses on the planet of all time. I think she's absolutely genius. Most people probably know her best from My Big Fat Greek Wedding, mm-hmm. where she plays one of the aunts, and she's fucking hilarious. But she was on a bunch of TV shows. She's a writer.
She was one of the original Second City crew on the original Second City TV, which yeah. had Martin Short and John Candy and Rick Moranis, and
yeah,
you know, it was insane.
She's on a few episodes of Only Murders in the Building, actually.
Mm. Yeah, and she's really good. Her whole relationship with Steve Martin and that is really... She plays a makeup artist, and it's just charming as hell.
Yeah. We love Andrea Martin. Anyway, so she obviously passes. She might be my MVP.
Yeah, it's certainly.
I mean, Jay
Hutt
up there
like,
for me. She's not my favorite, but
obviously, like Jennifer Hudson and like a few other people. But like, you know, come on. Let's see. Oh, she also voiced somebody on Earthworm Jim.
Right,
which I used to love. What about Sean Hayes, Rosie O'Donnell, Billy Eichner? These people who get sort of like little roles here and there.
They were
okay.
Fine. Yeah. Sean Hayes, I think, was the better of those three. My only issue with the Billy Eichner,
yeah,
is, and I said it while we were watching, there's no way a broadcaster in 1960s would have had a full beard. They just wouldn't have.
Oh,
they
sure.
wouldn't have let them.
Yeah.
No. Hippie
sure.
beards.
I felt like this one, compared to the other ones we've done, as far as stunt casting goes, they put them in fun, small bit roles, but then gave the bigger stuff to the people that could really, really deliver on the singing and acting put together.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I said Sprinkles. His name was Mr. Spritzer. It's not Mr. Sprinkles. I apologize for that. Anyway, the guy who owns the thing. Ephraim Sykes.
Mm-hmm. Ephraim was my MVP.
Seaweed.
Yeah, Seaweed.
Yeah,
he
looked like he was 34, but
I don't care. He was my favorite. Like, he is Butta, both voice and physically, and he's Butta human.
And
incarnate.
A really good actor too.
Yeah,
like,
I really
you know,
liked. He was my fave.
Yeah, he caught a lot. Like, he caught a lot of stuff in the moment that expanded on the situation, just his sort of eye rolls at some of the things that she said and the glances at the other African Americans as they were confronted with this little powerhouse white girl who wanted to just dance with them. But then his dancing was just marvelous. Oh my
He's
God.
Real good.
They
real
all
good.
Were. All those dancers were great.
Yeah, he was great. And then Garrett Clayton as Link Larkin.
I thought it was really good casting.
Yeah,
I thought he was
yeah.
fine. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it is what it is. It's, you know, a cute dude with a good voice that is a milquetoast character.
Yeah.
But comes
he does
around.
The thing.
And, yeah, it comes with the character. I like the character arc. But it's not necessarily a dynamic role.
Yeah.
He
does a lot of regional theater in Los Angeles and around. And he's friends with a lot of our friends and friends of mine, and you know, he's around, but he's good, and he's fine. He does fine.
Yeah.
He does the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard not to compare this to the 2007 movie, and I will say Zac Efron is a better screen presence than Garrett Clayton.
Totally,
whereas
I can totally
Garrett
see
Garrett maybe has a better voice and situation going on, and is probably better on stage. Anyway, just putting that out to the universe. Okay, and the last, I think, Little Inez.
Yes.
Hottie Wright Joseph.
Amazing.
Fucking rules.
Yes, yes.
She steals kind of the whole back half of the
Oh, my God, yes.
But then the last major person I think worth talking about is Derek Hough. Corny Collins. So I think he does a lot of this choreo as well, but like a lot of people would know him as a dancer more than anything. He's one of the Dancing with the Stars partners that partners with people all the time, but he's also a judge on World of Dance, which is a show I watch every season of. And then his sister is the other Huff who was in like Step Up and shit.
I know who you're talking about.
And like Rock of Ages.
Okay.
You know, whatever. And he's like kind of became a thing because of her. He's also a schoolboy at Hogwarts in the first Harry Potter movie.
Oh. All right.
Yeah.
Kind of. I thought he was good.
It's a fun character to play, and he's. I thought he was great. I thought he was fine. Yeah.
He was fine. He was good.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. What's your favorite song? What was your favorite performance number?
Oh, it's got to be J-Hud there at the end. Hands down was my favorite. But, you know, they were all catchy tunes.
I liked the two I liked the best, which, yes, agreed, catchy tunes. I really liked Mama, I'm a Big Girl Now. Mm. And then I also really liked Run and Tell That, which was Seaweed's first song.
Mm. Yeah, Run and Tell That is one of the best songs in the show, in my opinion, just in general. My favorite number in the show usually is Without Love. I think that's the most fun and funniest and really catchy number. But in this, I thought Good Morning Baltimore and Welcome to the 60s, when they were on that sort of backlot set of like Baltimore, that was the most intriguing set design, camera work, choreo. Welcome to the 60s with their costume changes and wig changes. Like, that was the most exciting to me of the whole show were those two numbers. So it's kind of like the first and last number of Act 1, interestingly enough. And then Act 2 kind of dies down, except for J-Hud just like...
Sure.
Bringing the house down boots.
All good songs.
Yeah.
All good songs. You guys want to hear some interesting Easter eggs?
Let's hear it.
Okay. So in this film, we caught, I think, two... But there's more than that. All right. So the one that we caught was really early on. There was a neon sign that said Divine Pet Food.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a multi-layered reference, y'all. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not only is it divine, there's also a neon pink flamingo next to it. So we were talking about divine earlier. It was in this film called Pink Flamingos. In this film, Divine eats dog shit.
Yeah.
Real dog shit. Well, according to mythos, the legend goes. And so in memory of Divine, they put up this thing. But it's kind of hilarious to make it a literal Pink Flamingos reference. I thought that was great. There's also Waters Plumbing.
Yeah.
In honor of Waters. There's Marin's Used Cars for the co-producer Neil Marin. There's Greenblatt's Baltimore Crabs for the NBC Entertainment chair Bob Greenblatt.
Okay.
There's Edie's Farm Fresh Eggs and Dairy, which was for Edie Massey or Edith Massey, who died before the filming of the original Hairspray. But she had been in all of John Waters' films before Hairspray.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of a very, very deep reference, but I thought that was cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like it.
But so those are super fun. You have the Kristen and Ariana doing Wicked Easter egg, even though they didn't know it was an Easter egg at the time. It became an Easter egg. Mm. You have Dove and Kristen. And then one of the best parts of the whole thing, in Welcome to the 60s, you have Ricky Lake and Marissa Jarrett Winokur come out. Winokur is the original Broadway person. I kept saying Nikki Blonsky. I thought it was Nikki Blonsky. It was not. Mm. It was the original Broadway and Ricky Lake from the original film playing like Pinkettes is mm-hmm. what they were titled as. And they just came out and sang a little bit with her. But it was really emotional for me. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. I love when things like that happen. It was a Spider-Verse moment. It was
Spider-Verse, well done. Well said. Yeah.
Toby and Garfield and Toby Maguire and Andrew Garfield and Tom Holland were all together for 1 second. Yeah, so that's all. That's all my Easter eggs. You guys nice. Got anything else? Hairspray specific?
Just about this particular version that we watched, there was a lot of like shaky camera stuff where they were trying to get in. And we've talked about this on some of the others. Like the stylistically, they're still not quite sure, although this one was much better, in terms of what they're doing and how they're shooting it. Are they shooting a live musical? Are they shooting a filmed version of it specifically? Like, it gets a sitcom soap opera kind of feel to it in terms of the just this aesthetic of it. But there was some shaky camera stuff a few times where we were all kind of like, hey, what was going on there?
Yeah.
Where I think they were trying to get intimate where they were clearly had somebody on and a handheld.
The lighting feels very soap opera. Like it feels like soap opera lighting where everything's just a little dark.
Yeah.
Mm. Until it's like a big number and then it's just a little dark and you're like, okay. But I do think they're trying to replicate what they used to do on TV. Specifically, like I used to always watch the Mary Martin Peter Pan. There's a moment in that where it's been proscenium the whole time and then all of a sudden the set opens and it pushes into Neverland and it's awesome. And like, as a kid, I remember being like, what? You know, but it's just a camera trick, but like they're trying to replicate that. Unfortunately, and this is nothing against the director. I think it's actually an NBC thing. I think they're skimping a little bit for how much we are able to do now in 2020 and beyond. Like, I mean, I know this was pre-2020, but still it's sort of like they have the ability to make these pretty amazing and spectacular. And they're doing almost that. They're like almost there. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're saying, Scott, hits the nail on the head is that they don't really know what they're making. Because they're TV people putting on a musical but trying to make it cinematic. But trying to also just do the musical. And so I'm like, guys,
you're not. Let's just get this done.
But I think next time we're going to talk about Grease Live, which was Fox, not NBC. And I will say this about Grease Live. Although it is very far from both the film and the original stage production, it is its own thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it rules. That's why I like it. Like, Jesse J comes out and sings Grease is the Word as the opening thing, which is not in the show. It's
not
only
in the show.
It's written for the movie. And then you have like three numbers in the piece that are just from the original show that are normally cut these days when you put up the show. So it's like, who are you homaging? What are you like? What is this for? But it's just them being like, all of Grease. It's just Grease, Grease, Greasing on Grease. Grease is shitting all over the place. And I'm like, great, I love that. Not you, Grease. Not Greece. We know we have some listeners in Greece.
I love Grease.
There was a time where we were the number 5 most listened to podcast in the fine arts in Greece.
Nice.
Remember that?
We're going to get back.
Season 2.
We're going to get back there.
Because we're talking about Grease so much. This episode. Anyway, that's going to be fun. That'll be the next time. But cool. You all have any other thoughts, concerns, hot takes?
This, out of all of the ones that we've watched, this has been my favorite thus far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
I think the casting was better than most that we've watched.
Agreed. Yeah.
Well, no, The Wiz had the best casting of all of them so far because everyone was pretty perfect for who they were cast as.
Yeah.
This one has its moments of being like, okay, you chose. Yeah. Okay. But for the most part, it's not that way. For the most part, everyone's fantastic. I guess I'm just thinking of Ariana. I think she's the only one that, but she asked for it, but she's the only one that feels a little out of place compared to everybody else.
I also love, though, that they wanted to make it the Ariana Grande does Hairspray, and she's like, no, I just want to do the part. And
love that.
I love that. That's cool. I'm glad to know that.
Respect. I also, this sounds like, I don't even need to say it, but I feel like I do. I think it's really easy. It would have been really easy for them to get a star to play Tracy, and it would have been really easy for them to, like, get someone smaller and put them in, like, makeup or, like, a fat suit or something.
Sure.
And I love that they don't do that for things. Like, John Travolta does put on a fat suit for the 2007 movie, which I have my own, like, sort of opinions on.
Sure.
Apparently he was like, I want it because I want to hide myself completely. I don't want anybody being like, that's John Travolta.
Sure.
Right. You still can totally John Travolta.
Yeah.
It's John Travolta.
It's John Travolta. The eyes. You're just like, dude, what are you talking about?
I know who that is.
Yeah. Okay. So are we done? Are we getting out of here?
Done. Yeah.
Is there anything else that needs to be said?
It was delightful.
No, I had a good time. I had a really good time. And like I said, I thought it started out slow. It sucked me in. And yeah, I enjoyed it. I had a good evening. Yeah. I mean, I was with some pretty remarkable people.
Yeah.
But the musical didn't hurt.
Oh, yeah. I was there. That's right. That's right. I'm carding. Let's go see a movie together, y'all. I miss y'all.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we are. On Friday, we're going to see a movie together.
We are, actually.
Oh, yeah. We're going to go watch the Talking Heads film, Jonathan Demme film.
Stop Making Sense.
Very exciting. Well, I guess we should introduce that then. Thank you for joining us for Hairspray Live, a Bailey pick.
Yes.
Oh, wait. No.
No.
We got a spitlet.
We got to do spitlet. Oh, God.
We got a spitlet.
LA Spotlight.
I've got three. I'm going to just blast through them. We still have Amanda Blake Davis directing Not Now.
ABD.
ABD. Brick House Theater in NoHo through March 5th. Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 3. Friend of the pod, Pastiche Queen, directed and designed All This Intimacy by Rajiv Joseph.
Oh.
At the Studio Stage. And it's only this coming weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 18th and 19th at 7:30. Brown paper tickets.
Awesome.
And finally, One Axe Somewhere, produced by Anima Films. It's going to be a night of One Axe happening once a month, and it will always be at a different location every month.
Oh, so that's
the first one, the first one's going to be at the Lincoln Beer Company on Monday, February 27th. Doors at 7 for drinks. There's going to be a food truck there. Show starts at 8. 4 brand new one acts, and then they will tell you that night where the next one act night will be.
Where are they procuring these one acts? Are they pre-written things by published playwrights, or are they brand new one acts?
They're brand new, just up and coming playwrights. Oh, and then the other hook about this is the one acts are based in the place that you are going to see the one acts. So these one acts will be based in Lincoln Beer Company.
Awesome.
Friend of the pod, Chris Haas, is writing one. We've also got Max Marsh, April Littlejohn, and Amaris Gagnon. Their four one acts are going up on Monday the 27th, starting at 7 o'clock at the Lincoln Beer Company.
Yeet.
Groovy.
Y'all should submit some one acts.
All right. The Circle X Theater has the West Coast premiere of Do You Feel Anger, and it's getting all kinds of buzz. Everybody I know who's seen it is loving it. It's at the Atwater Village Theater. Check out Circle X Theater online to get more information. Theater of Note has a 15-person play in a 48-seat theater. That's right, it's called Nimrod, a tragically unpresidential comedy. It is in verse, so come check it out. Let them know what you think. That's what they're asking for here. Theater of Note, check it out. Do You Feel Anger? I've already covered. I'm sorry I wrote this poorly. Ride the Cyclone at Chance Theater is playing, and it's also getting a lot of good buzz. Clybourne Park at CM Playhouse. Go check that out. Also getting rave reviews. And Misery at the Maverick Theater. Finally, a new play debuting, The Dry Years, which is starting to get some buzz, is Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays, February 4th through March 4th at 8 p.m. at the Broadwater Main Stage in Hollywood. Thank you for your time.
The Chance Theater one time made me do 4 auditions for one role, like a smaller role.
Yeah.
And the other guy in the room with me that was always reading for my part as well, for that part as well, knew everyone in the room, had done the last like 5 shows there. And I was like, is it more insulting to me or to him that they keep bringing us back and reading us against each other?
Right.
It was weird.
In front of each other too. Yeah. That to me is even weirder.
Yeah. I've been through some weird stuff.
With Chance?
Not with Chance, but with theaters. I just know exactly what you're saying.
Well, yeah. Chance Theater. I don't know. It's just interesting. Open Book Theater Company has a cabaret on March 19th in Carlsbad. You can look them up on at Open Book Theater Company on Instagram. Check them out. And that's all I got.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us. Now I can do this.
Yeah,
thanks for joining us for part 1 of 0. Wait, what am I talking about? Actually, this is like
this is part 4.
This is part 4 of my mini series.
Yeah.
Yes, spanning multiple seasons.
Spanning multiple seasons of the NBC Live musicals. Next time we'll be doing a Fox Live musical, Grease Live. But next week we are going to be covering Talking Heads, Jonathan Demme, Stop Making Sense. With guests Natalie Nicole Dressel, who you may have heard on our Paula Vogel miniseries, and her partner, Jay Dutcher, who's a local stage manager, director, and all-around incredible friend and person.
Yes. Yeah,
they both are.
It's going to be fun.
Stoked to have them on.
So we're going to have them on. That's going to be super fun. And that's all I got.
Questions, comments, compliments? You can reach us.
And then Andrew Lloyd Webber. Okay, keep going.
Yes. Andrew Lloyd Webber. Questions, comments, compliments. You can reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, Scott.
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who wrote our theme song. And listen right here. Our theme song is better than your theme song.
Bitch.
Ryan also writes all of our stingers. He's an amazing human being. I've known him for a long time. And it's great to have his stuff here. And finally, to the great award-winning playwright, Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it.
She don't even know it yet.
She don't know it at all.
She don't know it.
At all. All right, one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer. Are you okay?
Tripped over Carol Churchill's dick. Jesus.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it's big. It's a hog.
Huge. We stan Churchill.
Jesus Christ.
Carol, if you're listening, we love you.
And we respect you, despite how that just sounded.
Yeah, we respect your huge hog. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
CJ, what are you taking pictures of?
I'm taking pictures of my adorable cat watching us podcast.
Jesus Christ. As long as it's not of me. I thought it was of me. Yeah. Okay. Is that all?
Yeah.
That's it.
It's your turn.
Subscribe, rate, review. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
See you later.
Later.
I wake up each day and wonder what for. It seems to me there must be something more. Something more than stacks of dishes and washing this old floor. I don't know the rest of the words, but I know it's from a good movie. What's it from? And I'll pay you $100. Neither of you are going to be able to guess this.
Yeah. Oliver.
Cinderella.
It's from A Muppet's Treasure Island.
Oh my God.
Later, everybody.
The theater, the theater. Bring out Louis! Theater, theater. To be or not to be. Theater. theater.